Welcome to the Love and Longevity Podcast, where we have conversations about love, from relationships and friendships, all the way to aging, care for your parents or your grandparents, and tips and tools for living your best life as long as you can. I'm your host, Christian Ross, founder and chief happiness officer at Happy Talks. Every episode, we want to provide actionable insights for you. So I'm so excited for our next guest, an Atlanta commercial real estate icon. That's what I'm going to call him, Mr. Vance. My good friend, my buddy, and the ultimate purveyor of a good time. And also, too, I feel like king of common sense. So many people don't have common sense.
I don't usually get tagged with king of common sense, but I'll take it.
Well, I'm so excited to talk to you today because of the fact, of course, we always talk
about... You know you're the only person I would come to a podcast and do this for, right, Christian Ross?
Which is why I'm so happy. I hope you see the happiness on my face. One and
only time. One and only time.
High five. Thank you. Vance and I are a very unlikely pair. We have lunch all the time.
Yeah.
I send lots of text messages and go on church pilgrimages together.
Boy, did we.
But I really wanted you to be a guest because, A, we have a lot of spirited conversations.
Yeah.
And I think in this environment just of life, a lot of people feel like there needs to be this homogenous thinking that we all need to think the same. And it's like, we're all human. We all have our own opinions.
We can't all think the same. That's the problem. I mean, some people think they can convince you.
Right.
And they know damn well you just don't even have it in you.
Right.
But they're going to try.
They're going to try. And that's why I want to talk to you about the art of disagreement. Because I think it's an art now because so many people just get so flustered and so mad and like, why don't you agree with me? And it's like, it's okay to not agree with someone. Like, we don't agree on a lot of things all the time, but we listen to each other. So I wanted to get your opinion on how to properly disagree with someone.
You know, you got to be willing to listen and actually listen and not be willing to respond immediately. And, you know, so many people are going to give you the talking points on any subject.
Yeah.
And that's what just annoys the hell out of me. And they can't go in depth on anything. They can't cite a source. They can't do any of that. It's not in their heart.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a soul for it, and they want to talk about it because they think they're supposed to.
Yeah.
And they've been told they're supposed to believe something.
That's true.
They haven't thought it through.
That brings a good point, is about thinking it through. If you're going to have a position, think it through.
Then have a position.
Yeah.
Just don't have a statement and then yell at someone because they don't agree with you. That's what a lot of people do.
Yeah, just that art of disagreement. I just think now, especially online, everything is so loud. And it's like someone gives their opinion and someone just can't nicely articulate, okay, I hear your point, but I don't agree with it. I think X, Y, Z. I saw one person, their comments were turned off and she actually took off the post because she said, this post wasn't made for you to start calling each other the B word. This post was made so that we could have a dialogue.
Yeah. I don't think you can have real conversations online.
That's true.
Because people hide behind stuff. They say things that are provocative. Other people chime in. That's not what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I most of these conversations over lunch or in person, a cocktail or something like that. And that's why they work. I think that's part of it. You shouldn't talk about important things via text. You set up meetings via text.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can answer yes and no questions.
Yeah.
But you don't have conversations about important things to you.
That's so true.
And if you want to engage, and those people are the ones I'm talking about, they don't fill any of their positions in their soul.
Mm-hmm.
They just spout shit that they heard from somebody else.
That's true. The wise Vance.
I don't know that I'm wise, but I just know that. I'm 61 now, so I'm ancient.
You're not ancient.
Leave my age out. I want to pretend I'm younger.
You're seasoned.
You know, I love younger people.
Yeah.
Some of the older people annoy me because they're really stuck in their ways. And they'll take a position differently. They're just stubborn. And they might know it more, but they don't want to argue with you. So they just throw bombs at you and call you a communist or whatever. But you know me. I tend towards younger people.
Yeah.
No, and it's just always going to be my attraction. So.
And do you think that when it comes down to on the longevity angle of this conversation, you play tennis.
I do.
What do you think contributes to just your great mindset of the fact that you're like, hey, you know, I'm around younger people a good amount of time. I have these conversations. I do this. I do this. Like, you have an active social calendar.
I try. And, you know, I have friends different places. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have my tennis friends. I got a board friends, just my friends I've had forever. I've got a whole nother group of friends down with Jono and all those boys down there in Point Clear. I've got friends in California still. You try to keep in touch with people. I mean, yeah. I remember grandfathers, my father, my ex-wife, Don Dean, would send me that the way you used to text or send little things you wanted people to read or whatever. You know, you put them in an envelope, you put a post-it note on it. I remember Anne Marie's dad used to send me the Kiplinger newsletter. I used to love that thing. But and I read it because someone sent it to me. I wouldn't have read it otherwise. Right? Yeah. And I didn't read all of it. But my dad did the same thing. They cut clippings, and now we take photos and texts and all that stuff. So I do a lot of that, but I think I was raised to do that type of thing, not like digitally, but analog.
Yeah, that makes sense, though, because just like you said, like that's that connection.
Yeah.
That's that connection. People just discount how much connection leads to longevity. And just your mind being fresh.
I mean, if you're lonely, a lot of times you're miserable. Being miserable, you don't want to live a lot of that.
No.
Right?
Yeah. True that.
It's got to take away. It's got to take away from your life. Well, it takes away from those moments in your life regardless.
And when you were growing up, just like you said, like how your parents, you know, we have these analog moments, these things that we did. What are some of the things that they told you growing up that you feel like are so big in your life now?
It's funny you should ask that because I've thought a lot about this. You know, we're both at All Saints Episcopal together, and I brought Christian to church one Sunday, and she immediately was a celebrity. She came back another time, and everybody gave her a big hug, and she actually joined. And I love that. All Saints is a tricky place to navigate. But we've also done a lot of that. We were on a committee together for racial reconciliation. And, you know, I was on it, and I pulled you on because you needed to be there. And then you were in charge of the pilgrimage. And then now they want you in charge of everything. But we went through all that training, and everybody wants to talk about what they call it, sacred ground or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, the readings for all that. And again, this is sacred ground is a foundational program on race for the Episcopal Church, approved by the church, the bishop, whoever. And it's a good program. And I learned some stuff about the Indian people. I knew we put them on reservations, but I didn't know how we had a lot of the made them not be Indian and made them send them to white schools and tried to make them white. I didn't really know we did that. So I learned some stuff. But, you know, it always goes back, I mean, to the black-white thing. You know, if you live in Atlanta, that's foundational.
Yeah.
We're, what, a 50-50 city?
Yeah.
You got to figure that out or why don't live here.
Yeah.
Don't live here. And I think, you know, Atlanta's a model place for that. Mm-hmm. When you hear how we got the civil rights movement, I've been told the story and read the book, and I think most people agree with it. We had mayors, but Robert Woodruff at Coca-Cola ran the city. Mm-hmm. And Coca-Cola, and he coined the city too busy to hate. We didn't have the horrible race riots, so we had ours. I mean, there was bad stuff happening in Atlanta. I wasn't here. I'm from California.
Yeah.
So when I moved here, I wanted to know what the history of Atlanta was. And if you don't spend some time figuring out the history of, you know, how blacks and whites integrated and how they used to deal with each other and how they deal with each other now, it's hard to live here.
Yeah.
But that's a long way to get back to the question. You were asking, like, foundationally what I was taught by my parents, my grandparents. My grandmother just, you know, did that EFM course, and you have to do a lot of self-reflection. At least every year you have to do sort of a talk on yourself, which was one of the hardest parts for me. I mean, I don't mind talking about myself, but not formally. Like this, you know, it's making me sweat. Of course, from Ross, my lip is sweating. But, you know, Grace, Grandma, you go back to the scripture, Luke 11, too much who is given, much is required.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had a lot given to me. I had from a very young age that you're white, you're privileged, you need to do more for other people. Mm-hmm. You can't be a taker. That was my upbringing. And I think that was a lot of our upbringing.
Yeah.
And the other one I remember is you learn, and I come from one side of the family's French. Grandma was a royer. Grandma talk about noblesse oblige, which I think basically means nobility obliges.
Oh.
But it's the same thing going back to if you were given a lot or you're a king or a queen or something, then you need to be more like Princess Diana than Prince Charles.
Yeah.
you need to be given back. And she was the model. And listen, I'm not a Princess Diana lover. I mean, I just, you know, and they all do stuff. But who had the heart for it? I talk more about heart and soul than mind. Because a lot of people with good minds, but they don't have any heart and soul. And you know I don't deal with those people.
I know.
You don't deal with them either.
I don't. Because it's like empathy just goes a long way. And you just never know someone's story. You never know their background. And it's like to not give someone the opportunity to share it, it's short-sighted. But what you said about whom much is given, much is required, that's what I've always just known about you and seen reflected. Because it's one thing when people talk something. It's another thing when you see it in action. I've seen it in action with you. And that's why we're such great friends.
Yeah. I want to make another point. And I've reflected on this. And listen, I'm glad I did all those classes. But we talk about the division in the country.
Yeah.
You know, they make a point to highlight a woman, a smart woman, a black woman, professor, who writes a book on white privilege. Okay, it's a whole bunch of stuff. It's basically her opinion. And there's some facts quoted here and there. A lot of people immediately, white people, good-meaning white people, push back and say, that's bullshit. I don't even want to hear that stuff. Turn it off. They're done.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to figure a way to come at this better. You just don't hold up one person in one book that's been written in modern times and say, this is what it is, and white people suck, and y'all need to do better. And, you know, it's like, okay, we kind of know that. And there's a lot of white people. You know, just like there's a lot of black people, we're really different. One of my best friends, John Gotham, grew up in Idaho, was abandoned as a child, spent some time when he was 12, 13, living in a truck tire. That's a different kind of white privilege than I got. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just stupid.
You can't look at everyone like it's just one thing. Like, oh, white people are all one way. Black people are all, like, everyone is different. Whatever race, whatever creed, like, we're all different humans.
Yeah, and it's like we're not
taking that into account. And where you say the starting point at, it's funny because I think, you know, right now, well, as we're taping this, it's Black History Month. But when I think about it, even commercials, you hear the same three black people. And I'm like, no wonder people don't know about Black history. If we keep talking about Martin Luther King Jr., Harriet Tubman, I don't know who the third one is that's quoted in all the commercials, but there's three. So it's like, it's like we have to know about Garrett Morgan, who invented the stoplight. Like, we have to know about these computer scientists who help create video games and create computers. Like, these stories need to be told, because at the same time, how do you even look at people who systemically have been noted to be listed as inferior in so many different regards in the past if you're not helping to tell the stories of, and I realized that's why Carter G. Woodson started Black History Month. He was like, a lot of people, Black Americans, did not know their history. He's like, so when you have something that you've done that's great, share it so we can share it.
Yeah.
Now it's so commercialized. But if people get down to the root of why Carter G. Woodson started, he was like, it was not only for Black pride, but it was also to let's show other races around us that we are great.
Yeah.
And I think that's...
talk about our achievements, because no one else talks about your achievements. You got your people have to talk about your achievements. You know, your people have to support you. And eventually we get to where I think we're supporting each other. I think we've been through a hard time where we wanted to look at everybody's point in their life to see if we supported them or not. What I believed when I was 20 and what I believe when I'm 60 are so different.
Yeah.
But that's what you want, right? That's your learning experience.
And I think that's the other thing with longevity. It's a learning experience, and it's also the giving grace to other people and yourself. Hi, I'm Christian Ross, founder and chief happiness officer of Happy Talks, where we provide social phone calls for older adults. So while you're thinking about the care of your loved one, remember, connection is key to optimal health, and we would love to partner with you. Go ahead and visit www.happytalks.com.
But you know, you go back to the Black history thing, and this is where everybody, so my mind is just a big paradox, I guess. Mm-hmm. I always have the opposite sides of everything in my head, and I argue with myself. Like, you know this, and when you talk about Black history, the person I paid attention to was Martin Luther King Jr. and everything that he wrote and his speeches, and I still listen to that. I love listening to speeches.
Mm-hmm.
And you know this, my two heroes are MLK and Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
And people don't get that, and people remember. Now, Ronald Reagan's the one who made MLK holiday a holiday. I don't think they said things that they didn't mean things differently. They said things differently, but I think they both I think Ronald Reagan titled it The Shining City on a Hill. And Martin Luther King was, and we're going to get to the other side, you know, mm-hmm. from the I Have a Dream speech. Yeah. I mean, they both gave us a vision of something better. And I'll tell you what, this really hit me with Jimmy Carter. I guess it's Rosalind Carter. Jimmy's still living, right?
Yes.
Okay. I knew that Rosalind had passed. And at that service, I mean, I thought Jason did a fabulous job. He just brought heart and soul to that whole thing.
He did.
And he wasn't formal.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to be formal about everything to get it right.
Yeah.
I remember seeing they had over there in Old Fourth Ward Park, or they had done this spatial thing on the grass where it was a picture of Jimmy and Rosalind. Like right after he had died. It was in the AJC. And it just hit me and I read it. And they had been pliant, but it actually put it up like that week or like right after it happened. And it was in Freedom Park, I think is where it was. And I just remember thinking through that. I mean, I didn't agree with a lot of Jimmy Carter's, you know, what he did. I mean, I was a young kid at the time. And I remember we were camping on the beach in Pismo Beach. Aunts, uncles, maybe grandparents were there. And they were all talking about, we'll just have to start saving. I don't know if my kids will ever be able to afford a home at 20% interest rates. It was such malaise that, I mean, you can't be a young kid and hearing everyone you know talk about how awful it was financially and admire that kind of politics. I mean, Jimmy Carter's a Christian. And you know me, if you don't have a little Christian in your heart, I'm not going to pay you as much attention. But Jimmy Carter and Rosalind have done so many great things post-presidency.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't found foundations, like I said, but they built houses.
Yeah.
They went and worked with the poor people. They got their hands dirty.
Yeah.
They weren't off to Davos and jetting and this and that. They were just great old Southern Georgia people. And I just came to the conclusion, I mean, he wasn't a great president because he was too good for politics.
Mm.
There are some people that are just too good for politics.
That's so sad.
You know?
But it's true.
There's too good a man. Some people can navigate that. Some people can't. That was a realization for me. And, you know, the other thing is I voted for Trump. And God knows I'm probably going to have to vote for him again because I'm never going to vote for a Democrat. You know this about me. I was bringing this up for a reason that, you know, like a lot of shit he says. I mean, we went after John Lewis and called, you know, the 5th Congressional District a dump. And it's the nicest part of it. Like, you know, he just doesn't always get it right. You know, he had his whole life being a politician. And I kind of enjoy that, too. But I admire John Lewis. And when we went on that pilgrimage and we walked over that Edmund Pettus Bridge, I mean, stuff hits me hard.
You know, I was in Tulsa a few weeks ago. And the first thing that I saw was when after we finished our program, they took us to this one part and they said, okay, we're going to start walking from here. And he said, this is where 35 blocks was burned. But the bridge instantly reminded me of us being in Selma and seeing that with John Lewis. Like, it was like a flash when they said that. And I was like, oh my gosh, that looks like that bridge. And I think that's the other thing too, when we think of being able, again, artfully disagree, whatever, learning experiences to make sure that you have a full life as well. You have to come to these sacred grounds of experience. Because just like you said, how that hit you when you were there, I felt it in my body from head to toe. I was like, and then to see the street, it had one house. It was called the Physician's House. They had burned every house in the street except for this one house that left standing. And it's like, that was supposed to be a testament to the future. I feel like that was ordained for that house to be the one house standing on that block to be like, everything else was destroyed.
Yeah.
But this is still standing.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
Well, tell me about you a little bit. How did you get to be so agreeable? How can you can have spirited conversations with me and no one else can?
I think it comes back to, like you said, listening.
Mm-hmm.
I am definitely a listener because I want to hear people's point of views. My view isn't the only view, and I know that. And we all have different experiences. So if someone agrees with one thing, what exactly is making you agree with that?
Yeah.
What's pulling you that way? Like for me, I think it's curiosity. I think it's listening. And I think it's too also still understanding what my voice is and that, okay, well, great. I've now heard that point. Hopefully my voice can add another layer to that thought process.
Yeah, yeah. I think something we both do, and someone pointed it out to me recently, is we innately build communities.
Yeah. That's very true.
And I think that's the way we protect from loneliness, maybe a little ourselves. We build communities. And I think you do a really good job of that. I mean, you're building a business on it.
Thank you.
I've done some business on it in my professional community. I'm better at keeping up with personal friends than professional friends, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm. But see, that goes exactly to what I wanted to talk to you about, too, was the fact of the stats for male loneliness. They're so high, and especially for fathers, they're really high. And the Surgeon General has come out. He said everyone is experiencing high degrees of loneliness. But when you look at it, it's particularly young adults. It's just these segments of people, the older adults who I love and cater to. And then there's, of course, men. Of course, women are in there, too. But especially with men, like women have no problem with being like, hey, I'm lonely. Come talk to me. What's up? Or let me go here.
Yeah.
What would you say to that man who's experiencing loneliness? Maybe he's been a new father for, 4 or 5 years and his friend group is dwindling down. You have two boys.
Yeah.
You were a young father at one time and your grown sons who are doing excellent now. How did you maintain relationships then and what does it look like now?
I think I figured out later, it's important to spend time with your peers.
Yeah.
You can't get rid of your loneliness spending it with your wife, your wife's friends, your children, your children's friends.
Yeah.
And none of your male friends if you're a guy.
Yeah.
And there's been so much trying to put men in a box and tell everybody who we are and we're toxic and we're this and we're that. It's like, fuck y'all. just shut the fuck up. You've been around the women that are toxic. I've been around the men that are toxic.
Yeah. Those are toxic humans in a box versus
it's
the actual.
Stupid.
And that's the thing too. Like loneliness is not gendered. And I think that's one thing. It's not like it's a male problem. It's not like it's a female problem.
But I do think you're right that women do reach out to each other and they have closer friendships. And men's friendships are built in a community through sports or through schools, through fraternities.
Yeah.
We need those things more than, girls are going to find a club and live in the dorm and start their own sorority.
Yeah.
I was in a fraternity. I was Sigma Chi and love that and stay involved. Son became one, and that's a great experience. Mm-hmm. But that's a community for men that forces us to follow a program, a ritual. It's actually a way to live.
Yeah.
And Sigma Chi is very Christian. So, of course, I have an affinity towards it.
Yeah.
I'm a libertarian Christian. I'm really not about the rules. Is that right? That makes sense,
it
right?
It makes all the sense.
I took that 4-year, Ethelwire Carter, my spiritual advisor, shout out to Ethelwire Carter. We did that EFM class, which is again through Swanee, and it's a theology class, I think by extension. And I did that and went through the Reformation, and it's 4 years. I took 5. It's every Monday night for 5 years and a whole lot of studying in between. And we had state senator, Ed Lindsay, who read everything 3 times and could quote everything by sight. And I'm like, no, I'm not that guy. I never will be. But, everybody's different.
Yeah.
And after all of that, and I studied it all and paid attention as much as my ADD mind can, but it really just comes out to God is love.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to figure that out. The whole rest of the Bible is explaining that to you.
That's so true.
And giving you situations and reasons why love fixed it.
Yeah.
And that's really all it is. So, I'm that guy. I'm going to try and bring love to the situation and solve the problem. I'm not the most empathetic person. You see when I get it wrong. No one's trying to sound perfect. I've got all my vices.
When I read these articles and you're the first person I think of because I'm just like, man,
yeah.
Vance has so many people, I feel like, that are almost vying for your attention, And then people who, of course, you have great relationships with that are always, you have someone you could always call. And that's the one thing that they were saying, that 40% didn't have one person that they could really call and feel like they could have a conversation with and kind of be vulnerable with. And people need that.
You do need that one person or a couple people. I have some good people that I can talk to things about. But again, that's not my nature, is to talk about personal things.
And yeah.
The example that I can think of that I just felt out of my mind was, last Christmas before last.
Yeah.
I was in the hospital. I came home. A lot of stuff had happened. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go into all that.
Yeah.
But, I put out a text to friends and just said, guys, I'm physically better, but my mind's tortured. I had too much in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're at home and you're recovering and you're by yourself. I mean, I put out a call and people came.
Yeah.
I mean, people brought food. They came over and had a glass of wine, talked. I mean, you came. I mean, a bunch of 20 people probably came by.
Yeah.
People don't know. I mean, people don't know when it's okay to come by.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're not sure, well, you're going to take the easy way out every time. I mean, it's like you're not going to go show up when you don't really have the time to do that. But people took the time and it was so appreciated. And I just knew, I could tell in my head, it was just going to be awful if I didn't get a way to, like I said, you know, I can handle two bad things happening to me when five things are happening at the same time.
Yeah, it's a lot.
I can't do that.
Yeah.
I don't have that brain.
But I'm glad that you reached out because so many people won't reach out.
I am too. And it was, you know, it was embarrassing to do, but it's, you know, it worked. Now I'm not embarrassed by it. Yeah, you got to try something. But anyways.
So, for that person who maybe they have one friend they haven't talked to, maybe they've ostracized their people. They haven't followed up. What would you say to kind of just start it back?
I think you have to figure a way to live in community.
Yeah.
And you know me. I mean, I'm at the country club. I'm on the tennis team. I'm the co-captain. What did I do? I'm the co-captain of the mixed doubles team. I'm the oldest person on the team. I'm not the best player, but it's the people, you know, they're fun people to hang around with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm at church. Love to talk to the older people. I gravitate to those people at church because I think they remind me of those grandparents and stuff that were sort of foundational.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the place where I might gravitate to older people. This is another way I was raised, getting back to privilege and all that. It was grandma. And this is my father's grandma. And my father is a scientist, but he is just a precious Christian man. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, president of the Gideons in L.A. and did all that stuff. And, you know, those poor men had to quit doing that.
Yeah.
Because the kids started, like, throwing the Bibles back at him.
Oh.
Throwing them in the trash.
Oh.
Lighting them on fire. They just quit doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a bunch of nice men in their sport coats and couldn't be any nicer people, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was, you know, he ended up probably doing that now for 5, 6, 7, 8 years. They kind of quit.
That's a bit of community, I mean, too.
Yeah,
but with people are doing that, you're no.
Yeah. And this is for people who don't ever go to church. And listen, I don't go that much right now. Again, I was brought up like when you used to say, I don't want to go. I don't need to go. I don't need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I got to handle the day, all the rest of that. I remember, I'm pretty sure it was grandma, because this was grandma. That was grandma's role in my life. Said, Vance, we don't go to church for us.
Ooh.
When you show up at church, you're going there to be there for the other people who need you.
Wow. Oh, grandma.
Think about that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think about some of those older people that I go, and some of my favorite people at church were the Pattons, or still are the Pattons.
Mm-hmm.
I would meet them when I ushered out of the car. Mm-hmm. And I knew not to help Shug, because she's very independent. But standing there, and these were 90-year-old people that came to church every Sunday. And they recently got moved into Canterbury Court. They couldn't attend. I just found that out. But I couldn't go to church and not go give Shug a hug.
Yeah.
And they were like a bright star to me.
Mm-hmm.
So when people say they don't need to go to church, well, it's like go once in a while and go give somebody a hug and go do what you're supposed to do at church.
Yeah.
You know, church isn't just something you go and you listen and you leave. You got to figure that out. A church can be all different kinds of things. Right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's kind of foundational to me. Again, I'm not a big rule follower. And I'm not going to rock and roll church because that's just not my vibe. And when I go to church, I want it to be very worshipful and very formal. And
mm-hmm.
I love the liturgy and things like that. And that's, I find strength in that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not going for me. It's not a consumer-based church. It's not an entry-level place either that we go.
Yeah.
It's, you got to be pretty smart. You got to figure out things on the fly. It's not Kumbaya church.
Yeah.
And I like that.
I do too. I think the one thing I just remember my mother saying to me when I was like, I've joined an Episcopal church. And she was like, oh, you're an Episcopalian now. She goes, I can see that. I was like, what does that mean?
I don't know what that means anymore. It used to mean something really different. It used to mean a lot of white privilege is all it meant. And it's different. And I'm glad it's different. But I would tell you, you know that I'm the biggest fan of Bishop Curry.
Yeah.
And I know that he's moving towards retirement. He hadn't been well. But anyways, he has been a really bright light in a very white church.
Yeah.
That has a lot of money and not a lot of people. And every person of color we get in there is a huge win. I mean, for the church, not for, I mean, just yeah, for no, me, for
I
me.
Think, I know.
Just
I
makes just, it cooler.
Just what I heard.
It just is. So you're a big win, Christian Ross. You're like, well, like, what they call that in Wall Street. You're a whale. You're a whale for the church.
This is so hilarious.
I was just saying.
I just love how deep the context goes when we're digging in. And yeah. I love that. I love that it's not. Like, I'm not a starter Christian. You know what I mean? I've just been on this journey
for
a while. You
have a foundation.
Yeah, so I
appreciate. And I think you're one
that.
Of those people who goes back to your foundation.
Yeah.
You think of what Chetta told you and your grandparents and yeah. your dad and all the rest of that stuff. And, you know, you're married to one of the most grounded guys. He just doesn't even need to be in public. And you guys have a beautiful marriage. And he's a cool guy, but we don't ever see him enough.
Yeah, y'all see him like three no, times a year.
He's Mr. Cybersecurity. He kind of like cybersecurity res his own self, George. Maybe we'll see you for an hour and a half next year at the Christmas party.
All right. So I would like to say, first of all, thank you so much for joining me. I'm so excited to have you because, again, I just think we all need to be open to things and listen to people and not
and work hard at not being lonely.
Yeah.
It's your job. The only person making you lonely is you. There's lots of places to go.
There's
and you got to get involved. And you can't just go to work, come home.
Yeah.
There's churches, there's clubs, there's tennis, there's gay baseball. I mean, there's whatever you're going to go do, right? I mean, there's something for everybody.
There's
for
something
everybody.
For everyone. And yes. especially, too, we think about our phones. We can go on Google and just look at anything.
And you taught all this. Yeah. The screens, we all got to be better at that.
Yeah.
I mean, I get sucked in. After playing tennis, my group of men at the club we sit with, and we had had our conversation, and there were five of us sitting on our balcony, and we were all looking at our phones, and I noticed, and I'm like, we're worse than our children. We're literally, for 5 minutes, have all been staring at our phones.
But that's good that you broke everyone out of that, but that's what we
have
to do.
That's not what we generally do,
yeah.
But that's another place, you know, I go and sit and just bullshit.
Yeah.
We're done. But I love these groups. They meet at Panera Bread and they're 70, 80 years old. And these
yeah.
old men meet for coffee every morning. We'll figure that out.
Exactly.
Get out there and you cannot sit in your house and watch TV. You can't get not lonely by trying to get it off a flat screen.
Right. That's the perfect way to end this
We're
today.
Done.
Thank right. you so much for joining us. This is Love and Longevity with Christian Ross here with
the fans. Beautiful Christian Ross. Let me just tell you, Miss Happy Talks here is killing it. And there ain't a person in Atlanta that doesn't love Christian Ross.
Oh, you're so kind.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see you There's back some... here at our next episode.
All
Bye.
Right. Bye.
Thank you for joining us at Love and Longevity with Christian Ross. If you enjoyed what you heard, give us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to follow us. And if you like more from me, you can subscribe to the Happy Talks newsletter at the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening.